You are now tuned into the Truth Frequency.
We are TFR. TFR.
Truth Frequency Radio.
I wipe my brow and I sweat my rust. I'm breathing in the chemicals. I'm breaking in, shaping up, then checking out on the prison bus. This is it, the apocalypse. Whoa, I'm waking up.
Hello and welcome again, ladies and gentlemen, to the Red Pill Reports. My name is JD. We are live right now. It is Tuesday. We made it through Monday all together. I'm very happy about that. And of course, today is the 23rd day of December, so Christmas Eve, as it were. I just want to thank all of you guys for tuning in once again. I just cannot appreciate you guys enough out there, those of you who are checking out the website every day and tuning into the broadcast, sharing it with your friends. That's how this whole thing keeps going along, and just for all of you guys out there doing that, cannot thank you guys enough. As promised, we're going to have a big show today. Real quick, if you're a new listener out there, this is what we do every day, Monday through Friday. We're live 10 till noon Central Standard Time. In the first hour, we go over all of the pertinent news of the day, kind of from around the world and hopefully from your neck of the woods also. Also kind of try and figure out what some of the agenda is behind telling us the things that they're telling us. So try and, dig through the matrix a little bit and figure out exactly which way the wind is blowing. But in the second hour of the broadcast, we always have a tremendously fascinating guest. And today, I guess tremendously fascinating doesn't really cover the spectrum. Commander Dale Brown is going to be on the show today. And I have to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, I was humbled, when I found out that he was going to be on the show, because he does not do a lot of interviews. And B, I had about a three-hour conversation with him yesterday, and as of right now, he has my nomination for President of the Universe. The gentleman is so smart and thoughtful, and to have somebody who is that intelligent and thoughtful and altruistic find their way into essentially the pinnacle of private police forces in America to create his own organization. He's got a 20-year track record of just absolute amazing service to the people of Detroit. So obviously, we're talking about police brutality right now. We're talking about, whether or not this division between civilians and the police, that division that seems to be part of the agenda, coming out of the mainstream, we want to validate that. We want to find out if that's actually legitimate or not in terms of that division and where that division might be coming from. I think you guys are going to be incredibly, incredibly supportive of Dale Brown's organization, and also, I think immediately we'll be demanding that we see something similar to his organization blossoming across the country. Now, he doesn't have a lot of plans to expand quickly right now. They like the pace at which they are growing, but I'm telling you, once you hear the method that this gentleman has with his organization and the track record, you guys are going to be floored. This is not just an answer to the police brutality issue, but I personally believe that this is the answer, if not one of the top three answers that we can find right now. There's some other things I think we should do, but getting Dale Brown's model implemented into cities nationwide is going to be absolutely critical to fixing this police state infrastructure that we all find ourselves to be in right now. So anyway, 11 o'clock, Commander Dale Brown. I'm humbled that he will be on the show. I hope you guys are going to be able to tune in and share this one with friends. If you've got law enforcement officers out there that are friends of yours, they're going to want to hear this show. We're not going to be bashing law enforcement officers by any means, under any stretch of the imagination. Again, we're going to talk about the division that seems to be part of the agenda. So much different conversation. So please get your law enforcement buddies on board with this, because this is information that they're going to want to have because they may not even know that an option like this with Commander Brown's Detroit Threat Management Center even exists, you know. And until you outline the problem, you can't start working towards solutions. So that's part of what we do here at Red Pill, is just to expose the matrix, figure out, yes, physically the matrix is there, there are certain layers to it, and then we start looking at the layers and trying to find solutions for them. And so that's why we're bringing Commander Dale Brown onto the show today. Tomorrow, Dr. Richard Allen Miller will be back on the broadcast. His first broadcast was incredibly interesting. The gentleman essentially is a genius. He's got eidetic memory. He's just, in terms of black ops type stuff, you're not going to want to miss this discussion tomorrow, guys. And I thank Dr. Richard Allen Miller for agreeing to take some time away from his family during the holidays to be here. And in that same vein, Friday's show should also be absolutely outstanding. Wolfgang Halbig will be joining us. Now, for those of you who don't know, Wolfgang is an independent school safety analyst and was tasked with explaining to school districts inside of Florida how to prevent incidents like Sandy Hook. So he said, well, this is my job to understand Sandy Hook, so I better go ask some questions. And he got shut down at every turn. And so he's really been ineffective in his ability to help other school districts, and that obviously causes some turmoil into the gentleman's life, and he decided to jump in full feet into the Sandy Hook investigation and has uncovered incredible amounts of information. I was even able to get Commander Brown to stop and think about a couple of things regarding the Sandy Hook that he hadn't even thought of. And Dale Brown, ladies and gentlemen, is not somebody who buys anything that comes across the glowing box in the corner of your living room. He's not one of those guys. But then we got on Sandy Hook, and I said, well, you know, we're going to have Wolfgang on. And he said, well, I'm pretty sure that event happened. So I just kind of took a deep breath and just let loose on about the 15 major glaring issues with Sandy Hook. And by about the third one, which was the fact that the school had video equipment and yet no footage has ever surfaced, he stopped me right there and just said, okay, I'm going to dig back into this investigation now, because that in and of itself, plus the fact that there's never been a lawsuit in the most litigious country in the world, are you kidding me? Oh, I'm sorry, there is a lawsuit now. The families are suing Bushmaster. That makes sense. Anyway, Friday, Wolfgang Halbig will be here at 11. Do tune in for that if you're still on the fence about Sandy Hook. Well, I'll tell you what, you're not going to want to miss that conversation. Okay, so also please go check out redpillreports.com. Every day there is a show section which will outline some important information about the guest and some of the links that you can follow from their work. And also we have a list of all of the articles that we're going to try and go over in the next 45 minutes or so, just to kind of keep you guys up to date. But I don't always get to all of them, so it's a good opportunity for you guys to go and share redpillreports.com with your friends and family. And if you want to follow along through the news and see where some of these articles come from, they are all there for you. Also at the top of the page, still, just like every day, guys, mortgage crisis. We've got 9 articles about the mortgage crisis. You absolutely have to get them in front of your friends and family over the holidays here. This is going to be an uncomfortable conversation around the dinner table, but at the same time, that's the conversation that needs to be had. So I highly, highly recommend you guys download those and get them printed out. Also, please follow the link to the petition if you guys are a registered voter. They're obviously, you know, I can stand right next to Greg and tell you without a doubt none of your information is going to be on-sold to anybody else. That's not the name of the game. But the petition is super-duper important that we get those things completed and we get this whole investigation brought up in front of Congress, because that's the only way we're going to win this battle. And then on a final note, please check out the Karapars link at the top. I figured out this Christmas that Karapars make an absolutely awesome gift. It's super easy, fits in a card, it's got value, it's a conversation that most people can have pretty easily, and opens up a lot of conversations if people are not interested in gold or don't know why they should have it. So check out the Karapars link at the top of redpillsreport.com and get involved, because this is a fantastic company. We're all very happy to be a part of it. And it's just about getting physical gold in your hands, guys. It's an offshore savings account. You get paid in euros. There's no taxation. There's no social security number attached to it. And they will send you gold. So, I mean, I don't know how you could be more excited about something like that. But I tell you what, I love Karapars. So, my two big Christmas gifts this year. I'm giving Karapars and I'm giving New Mana storable food. And that is not because I'm connected with New Mana in any way other than I'm good friends with Daniel Brigman, who is the owner of the company. And those are the kind of gifts that I like to give for the Christmas season. You know, these are actual things that people, you know, can use. And it's actual, like, wealth you know, a store of wealth that someone can have, and then you know, you're adding to someone's safety cushion, which is really, if you care about the people around you, maybe the junk from China, not high on the list this year. Anyway, that's my spiel for the morning. Let's move on to the news, because as usual, the world is still spinning around and there's a lot of goofy stuff going on. I want to talk about this VIP pedophile ring that has been exposed in the UK. Scotland Yard is now getting involved, and it looks like this particular investigation is going to get more and more serious, which is great, because obviously the history of these very important pedophile people, this is a long going investigation. These people have ties going all the way back into the 70s and 80s. But right now, Scotland Yard is probing five different VIP pedophile rings, five of them, after a Labour MP handed in a dossier naming six serving politicians and lords. So they are not only investigating retired politicians and lords, but people who are actually serving right now in the UK. They're investigating claims that at least five different pedophile rings operated at the heart of Westminster, and that those pedophile rings were all covered up. It's unbelievable. Labour MP John Mann has submitted an explosive dossier to police naming 22 politicians, including three serving MPs and three serving members of the House of Lords, all of them linked to historical child abuse. Last night, he said that the complexity of the criminality at the heart of the establishment during the 70s and 80s had been completely underestimated. So hopefully they're going to get this situation resolved and get some closure for these poor victims. It's just unbelievable. But, you know, it really follows with what's happening in Hollywood right now. I mean, a lot of actors are coming out and saying that there's a lot of similar incidents going on in Hollywood. But interesting that the UK investigation is moving very quickly at the, you know, now at the helm of the Scotland Yard. But in Hollywood, you know, these actors are getting blacklisted for speaking out against pedophilia and things like that. It's just, man, what a crazy world we live in. Anyway, let's move back over into Spain. We had a report yesterday about a couple of protests that erupted in Spanish cities. They have come back out into the streets in Spain. More than 30 cities expressed their anger over the new so-called gag legislation that criminalizes social protest and, according to demonstrators, curbs the freedom of expression. And the new slogan of the movement is gag law. Why do they want to shut us up? And unite several groups of citizens spearheaded by the We Are Not Criminals civil platform. But 30 different cities, a lot of protesting, no violence in terms of this one, or in terms of these protests that have happened early this week, which is great, because obviously over the weekend there was a little more violent response from the police. But the rally in Barcelona alone saw 12,000 people just yesterday. So people in Spain, I'll tell you, we could really take a lesson from the people overseas about how to properly protest government action. And that was one of the points that I think Dale will bring today, is that, you know, historically, Americans are pretty, we're pretty willing to get involved when we see injustice. You know, we're the kind of people that, well, you know, we don't want a king. We want freedom and sovereignty. And but it seems like we've been really weenified, if that can be a word that I can use, over the last, you know, many decades, to the point now where our protests are either looting or just complete, you know, weenification, I guess I will say. Coming news coming out of Italy, this is really interesting. Neo-fascists. Italy arrested a bunch of neo-fascists, according to the police there. They arrested 14 neo-fascists after they uncovered a plot to assassinate politicians and attack immigrants. Members of a banned far-right splinter group also planned to attack police in a campaign of violence over the Christmas period. The general who headed the anti-terrorism group told police at a press conference that the neo-fascists had begun to stockpile arms and weapons and were planning a terror campaign over the festive period. And this is an offshoot of the band Ordine Nuovo, which means New Order group. And they wanted to kill politicians 10, 11, or 12 at a time, is according to them, and as well as blow up the tax collection agency, while at the same time they also wanted to launch attacks on police stations, according to the Italian newspaper La Repubblica. Parente told journalists that his undercover team had been working for the last 2 years to try and infiltrate the group, and has made 14 arrests across the country, and another 44 people right now are under investigation. That group was founded back in 1956 in a bid to reform the Fascist Party and accused of being behind several bombings in the 1970s, which is why it was officially dissolved by the Italian government back in 1973. But neo-fascism on the rise across the planet. Kind of a scary deal. Here's another one, scary deal. China now announcing that it is going to deploy a 700-strong infantry battalion into the South Sudan at the beginning of 2015. And this comes as the war-torn African country signed an agreement with Chinese petroleum giant CNPC to boost oil production. So China's Central Military Commission approved a plan to send infantry battalions, which includes 121 officers, 579 soldiers, and all of them to a UN peacekeeping mission in the South Sudan. This was just reported as of yesterday. It's the first time that China has sent infantry troops to take part in a UN mission, as previous Chinese peacekeepers were primarily engineers, medical and transportation workers, and security guards. But the first 180 troops will fly to South Sudan in January. The rest will be there in March to perform patrol and security duties. Here's where it gets interesting. Now, the battalions are going to be equipped with drones, armored infantry carriers, anti-tank missiles, mortars, light self-defense weapons, bulletproof uniforms, and helmets, among other weapons. And, of course, according to the commander there, it's completely for self-defense purposes. So, yeah, they need all of that stuff for self-defense purposes. So what's actually going on? Well, they're going there because they want to guard their oil, just like we're going there because we want to guard our national resources. So there you go. That's what's happening in South Sudan. Interesting in South Sudan because they are the youngest state, really, in the world. They seceded from Sudan in 2011 and is kind of divided into two camps with a lot of violence, claiming thousands of lives, going back and forth, and widespread fighting fueled by rebels and military groups and lack of funds, with the lowest oil price in the world, according to traders, which has left the 4 million people there at risk of famine. I wonder if the peacekeepers from China are going to be doing anything about that. I didn't see anything on their list about bringing food and water and medical supplies, so maybe that'll be in a follow-up humanitarian effort or something. I don't know. 10 people injured as a man drives into a crowd during the Christmas fair in Nantes, France. Now, this is following a report that just happened a couple of days ago where another driver shouting Allah Akbar plowed into pedestrians. This is exactly what happened just yesterday in Nantes. Another driver shouting Allah Akbar drove into a crowd of people. There were 17 casualties and at least 12 of them were injured, five of them being very serious, again yelling Allah Akbar. But what's interesting now is that France is saying, you know, we don't think that this is a connection to terrorism, even though this is the third incident, because obviously you don't forget about the hatchet-wielding guy that was shot by police officers just over the weekend. So we had the hatchet guy, the crowd running, you know, the crowd ramming vehicle yesterday, and then or the day before yesterday, and then just yesterday, another one, all shouting Allah Akbar. The guy here yesterday gets out of the car and starts stabbing himself furiously in the chest to try and kill himself. Obviously, you know, they're going to say, well, this guy probably had mental illness. Well, yeah, it's called extremism. And for them to not at least consider the idea that these are connected acts of terrorism is kind of silly at this point. But so that happened in France. Man, I keep your head on a swivel if you were around here. That's just me, though. Let's see here. What else is going on? Come on, Internet. There we go. Hey, Internet. The United States is urging North Korea now to admit that it ordered the cyber attack on the Hollywood studio Sony Pictures and is asking for it to pay for the damages. Obviously, probably not going to happen, so we see a lot of tit-for-tat kind of stuff going on between us and North Korea, and I will get more into that when we get over into the tech news right now, because there has been some more tech developments in terms of this North Korean USA Sony Pictures debacle that we're in. Moving over into Syria right now, the Syrian army has claimed it has shot down an Israeli reconnaissance drone flying near the occupied Golan Heights. This was, of course, according to state media from Syria on Monday. Israeli, the drone that they shot down was an unmanned Skylark-1. Was shot down in the Quneitra province, which is close to the village of Hadar, which is all near the Golan Heights. It added that the downed aircraft had a range of about 20 kilometers and it was being piloted remotely from a ground station. Israeli military support obviously says they have no idea what's going on. They can't confirm or deny it because that's, you know what Israel does. And Israel jets in March actually targeted military operations and positions in the Quneitra region that borders the Israeli-occupied Golan Heights. And Syria and Israel are officially in a state of war. And Israel has been since the 1967 occupation of the Golan Heights, and the occupation is still not recognized by the international community. I'm not even going to say anything about that right now. Just going to move right on. How about, let's see, let's move into some national news here, because there are, as usual, tons and tons of things going on. Kind of an interesting story here. The Obama administration now aiming to create an insider threat job specialty to plug the leaks, obviously, in the wake of Snowden revelations and some of the other revelations that are coming out. The U.S. government is not only... Well, they're not interested in cracking down on the problem. They're interested in cracking down on your ability to get information about the problem. So obviously that should give you a kind of an indication as to which way the wind is blowing from the organization that we consider to be the government of this beautiful country that we live in. So the New Year's goal now of the federal office responsible for averting employee leaks is to make a career out of catching so-called insider threats. And this is a delicate task to simultaneously guard hardworking federal personnel and expose the bad apples. It takes different talents than those would one would normally find in counterintelligence analysm, human resource professional, or IT security. It's kind of a discipline that melds all of those disciplines together. What they're really struggling with right now is whether or not they're going to make a new vocational title for these people that are going to be working there. But if you are out there and you think you might be able to help the government plug these leaks, they are right now looking for supervisory intelligence operations specialists. That's the current title of this particular job, and it pays between $106,000 and $140,000 a year. So it sounds like a great job if you can get it. I don't think I'd want to be in internal investigations in the government. I think that would be a great way to end up dead in a ditch someplace, but that's just me. I'll stick to my little radio job here. Here's a story that kind of took me by surprise, but not really. This is a story about a video that was taken off of the shooter from Saturday's police execution in New York. Okay, so that gentleman had a Facebook page up. Of course, we're talking about Ismail Brinsley. His Facebook page had a cell phone video of an interaction that he went through with law enforcement, and obviously his page has been deactivated now, but some very smart person decided to yank this video off of the internet, and this is why I think things like this are important, and this is why we're going to talk about this with Dale Brown today, because this incident that was captured on Brinsley's phone happened a little bit over a year ago, but this is what happened, okay? So in the video, an officer claims that a dog signaled for drugs in Brinsley's bag, okay? He was sitting on a bus. Law enforcement officers approached him, started to harass him, and said that the dog gave some sort of signal that Brinsley had, drugs in his bag. Brinsley obviously refused to let him search his bag, and this is the conversation that we had. The cop says, the dog is indicating on your bag here, so that gives us probable cause to search the bag. Brinsley says he didn't bark or anything, and the officer says, well, have you been to canine training school? If you haven't, you probably don't know how my dog indicates. And Brinsley replies, well, you brought the dog over here twice. It left the first time after it sniffed the bag, and then you brought it back over here. And the officer does confirm that he brought the dog over twice, but then he says, listen, sir, I'm going to ask you a simple question. Would you like to do it on the bus, or would you like to go outside? And at that point, the officer attempts to force Brinsley to quit filming the encounter, telling him that while I'm doing that and conducting police business, you're not going to film me, so you can turn your camera off. Brinsley obviously tells the cop, we're in public right now, referring to the established right to film an officer engaged in carrying out his official duties, to which the officer responds, no, sir, not while I'm conducting a police investigation. And then the cop can be seen forcing him to quit filming the encounter, claiming illegally that he must stop. Now, does this take away accountability from Brinsley shooting these two police officers? Of course not. But there is a backstory here, and there is a backstory that falls right in line with this understanding that people are starting to really come to grips with in this country, is that we're not a democracy. We are a constitutional republic. All of us were created in God's image, and all of us were given divine rights. And, you know, I don't want to ruffle any American feathers here, guys, but as Americans, liberty is not your sole possession. It's not just for you guys. It actually exists for all humanity. It's not just liberty for United States citizens. Actually, we are the country that codified it and recognized it and built a government in order to preserve those rights for the people, but it does not take away liberty from other people. So when a police officer is charging you with a victimless crime or telling you that the state is a victim in some situation, therefore elevating the state to a position higher than you, remember, the state is a construct of the minds of men. The state cannot be sovereign unless you are sovereign. That's how it works. When you talk about what are the criteria for sovereignty, well, control of your own borders would be one of them. You know, let's see, control of your own life, all of those kind of things that people want to ascribe to state institutions or municipalities or things like that. Those are pure and simple traits of humanity that you're trying to then take and put onto a state. So when a police officer says, you know, you ran a stop sign and I'm going to give you a ticket, now you're obligated to taxation because you've got to trade your labor for fake Federal Reserve notes because that's the only notes that the municipality that's writing you the ticket will take. Well, let's say you don't want to go into that. You don't want to, you know, you don't want to trade your labor for Federal Reserve notes. Well, now they can put you in a cage. And if you're one of those people like me, doesn't want to go be put in a cage, they can shoot you. And what do they get? Well, they get a paid vacation. This is institutionalized oppression, and people are starting to wake up to it. Again, the correct answer is not to go shoot police officers dead in their cars. That's not the way to do it. But you need to outline the problem before we can have a discussion about the solution. That's what we're going to do in about a half an hour with Commander Dale Brown. Thank you guys for sticking with us through the news. We have a lot more stuff to go over in the next half hour. We're going to take a quick 3-minute break. This is, of course, your daily dose of deprogramming. My name is JD. Thank you guys for being here. We will be right back, ladies and gentlemen.
So, you want the news and information without the hate, the hype, the fear? Well, you've come to the right place. You can support Truth Frequency Radio by spreading the word on social networking sites like Facebook, Twitter, or your favorite forums. Want to take Truth Frequency Radio on the road? Listen on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or other mobile devices. Want more than just the free stuff? Sign up for a VIP membership for as little as $4 a month and get super high-quality downloads, member-only content, and instant access to your favorite shows without the wait. It's only through your love and support that we're able to cover the cost and continue broadcasting. So now, stay tuned for more Free Speech Radio right here on the Truth Frequency Radio Network. KTFRN Worldwide.
Big business has discovered the preparedness market, and that makes it difficult to know where to go and who to trust. MyPatriotSupply.com is owned and operated by patriots just like you, has the best prices on storable food, non-GMO seeds, water filtration devices, home canning equipment, survival and self-reliance books, and more. MyPatriotSupply.com has old-fashioned values and the absolute best customer service in the industry. Look for the deal of the day, unique, affordable survival supplies that fit anyone's budget. Get same-day shipping on all orders and free shipping on orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927, 866-229-0927, or visit MyPatriotSupply.com for emergency preparedness, self-reliance, and food independence. Shop with a name you know and a name you can trust. Before it's time to survive, it's time to prepare. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Did you know there are 3 million edible food plants on Earth, and none have the nutritional value of the hemp plant? HempUSA.org offers you hemp protein powder. It does not contain chemicals or THC, is non-GMO, and is 100% gluten-free. Hemp protein powder burns fat, builds muscle, contains 53% protein, and feeds the body the nutrients it needs. Call 888-910-4367 and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at hemp. HeatUSA.org. Wouldn't it be nice to have one product that replaces more than 10, saving you space, time, and money? HempUSA.org has a complete full-spectrum vitamin mineral detox formulation called Micro Plant Powder Gold. Micro Plant Powder Gold contains 101 vitamins, minerals, probiotics, and iodine, has a 100-year shelf life, and is a perfect addition to any storage shelter. Make Micro Plant Powder Gold your choice. Call 888-910-4367 or visit HempUSA.org today.
Monkey Radio with Tom and Ramon.
Saturdays on Truth Frequency Radio.
Broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys for sticking with us through that 3-minute break. We are right in the middle of our new segment right now, which is what we do during the first hour on every broadcast, essentially. And right now, we were talking about police brutality and things like that. I'm going to get away from that issue a little bit. I do want to mention right now that the New York Police Department Commissioner, Bill Bratton, said Monday that tensions in the New York area right now are echoing those of the 1970s, and that's a fear he expressed only days prior to the ambush killing of two police officers. So again, you know, the situation in New York right now is very, very pins and needles, I guess would be the best way to describe it. And I even heard a story yesterday that the police union in the NYPD, the police union responsible for that police department, is requesting that their officers do not follow any orders from their commanders at this point. They're taking all of their orders directly from the union at this point. So what that means, I couldn't possibly tell you, but I heard that, and it was verified to me yesterday. So, you know, we'll talk with Dale about, you know, whether or not that's a typical operating procedure for situations like what is unfolding in New York right now. But I found that to be a little bit unusual. U.S. civil rights groups on Monday called for the U.S. Justice Department to appoint a special prosecutor to investigate the CIA's use of torture and other extreme measures during investigations. Isn't it amazing how people are so upset about the interview being canceled, but not so upset about the CIA report? Isn't that amazing? I just love this society that we live in. It's fantastic. Okay, so the American Civil Liberties Union and Human Rights Watch said in a letter to Attorney General Eric Holder that the recent Senate Intelligence Committee report on the CIA included significant new information about the nature of tactics and the decisions that led to their use and the number of prisoners involved. Administration officials said that the Justice Department has no plans to reopen its investigations into the conduct of CIA interrogators towards detainees captured after September 11th. But the group said that the findings, the new report's findings, mind you, warranted a fresh criminal investigation. They go on to say that we believe the failure to conduct a comprehensive criminal investigation would contribute to the notion that torture remains a permissible policy option for future administrations, which would undermine the ability of the United States to advocate for human rights abroad and compromise Americans' faith in the rule of law at home, all of which I think are absolutely, completely accurate. You know, you're not going to create less enemies by essentially dismissing everyone who just committed all of these horrible acts of, atrocities. I don't know if you guys know some of the worst things that are in that report, and I'm not going to go over them here on the radio because the report itself is pretty mild, but it's important to remember that the administration is holding back 6,000 pictures, 6,000 pictures that would make the pictures that we've seen from Abu Ghraib look like Disney World, and I'm not joking about that. The indication is that some of those pictures are horrifying, absolutely horrifying. So unless we're going to then corral all those people and bring them to justice, we're just giving them a pass at this point, and the rest of the world is obviously going to look at that and say, wow, well, they're just as bad as they could possibly be, and nobody seems to be making any changes. So I really do hope, and obviously I don't have a lot of faith that Eric Holder is going to do anything that relates to justice, because that just doesn't seem to be his MO going forward. But it is the Christmas season. Can all be hoping for miracles, I guess, right now. Anyway, moving into Arizona right now, many young immigrants who are protected from deportation under Obama administration policies are expected Monday to begin pursuing Arizona driver's licenses. The Arizona Department of Transportation said it is anticipating a rush of immigrant applicants in the weeks ahead at motor vehicle divisions offices worldwide, or statewide, excuse me. And the preliminary injunction issued December 18th by the U.S. District Judge David Campbell barred the state from enforcing Governor Jan Brewer's policy of denying licenses to about 20,000 immigrants. So as of Monday, illegal immigrants will be able to get driver's license in Arizona, and Arizona expecting that that will be a pretty big onslaught of people. Moving on here, let's see, a recently released documentary about former government contractor Eric Snowden being considered right now a potential candidate for the Academy Awards next year, but it's actually not going all that well for the team behind the movie, which is called Citizen 4. Attorneys representing a Kansas man filed a civil suit in district court on Friday last week, in which they allege that Snowden and the movie director Laura Poitras and others involved with making Citizen 4 intentionally violated federal law by profiting off of the disclosed state secrets. Because the movie right now, even though it's only been released in a few select theaters nationwide, has already made about $2.1 million. And so the lawsuit alleges that some of the information that they're covering in the movie is essentially not supposed to be turned over to anybody else outside of the intelligence community. So these people are effectively profiting on state secrets, which, technically probably could be considered illegal. So we shall see if they'll get an injunction to stop the showing of that movie. But I'd recommend trying to find it in a theater near you if you can, because obviously if they're considering it for an Academy Award, it's probably pretty good. I'm going to go check. No, I won't. I'll have somebody that I don't know that I never speak to check Pirate Bay and see if they can find it. Anyway, let's see here. North Korea threatening to strike the White House and the Pentagon with nuclear weapons. Probably just more, rhetoric and whatever that you hear from North Korea, which is pretty standard propaganda kind of stuff. But they're really upset right now that Barack Obama is continuing to blame North Korea for the Sony attack. And so North Korea is saying that if these rumors don't stop being spreaded by the administration, that they're going to, use everything in their arsenal against us, apparently. So, keep your head on a swivel, I guess. North Korea could be shooting weapons at us anytime. I doubt it. Anyway, let's talk about Missouri real quick. I got to give some kudos here. There is a new bill that is working its way through Missouri. Obviously, the big hindrance on this one will be the weasel Jay Nixon. But the Missouri Fourth Amendment Protection Act would ban material support or resources from the state to warrantless federal spy programs. This House bill is numbered 264, and it was introduced by a third-term Republican representative, Keith Frederick. He is from Rolla, Missouri, and it reads, in part, this state and its political subdivisions shall not assist, participate with, or provide material support or resources to enable or facilitate a federal agency in the collection or use of a person's electronic data or metadata without such person's informed consent or without a warrant based on probable cause that particularly describes the person, place, or thing to be searched or seized, or without acting in accordance with a legally recognized exception to the warrant requirements, which is, obviously kind of like common sense being codified. But it's unfortunate that in the world that we live in right now, we have to codify common sense into our legislation, because if we don't, well, we'll get run over, essentially. And this legislation is a pretty natural follow-up to Amendment 9, which Missouri voters approved by over 70% back in August. And this is according to Michael Bolden. He represents from he reports from Off Now Project is the name of his organization. He said by a huge margin, the people of Missouri said that electronic communications and data should have the same protections from unreasonable searches and seizures, just like a person's home, papers, and effects. And this legislation would ensure that the state will not help federal governments carry out such programs. So please, if you're in Missouri and you're a voter, support that bill. My goodness, we have to start calling Jay now and telling him that that's actually something we would like to get passed. And another bill actually just flew through both chambers of Congress and is headed towards Barack Obama's desk. And this is a bill addressing police killings. And nobody seemed to have noticed, but we found this article. And this new bill, once Barack signs it, is going to require local law enforcement agencies to report every police shooting and every other death that happens at the hands of the police. And that data will include the ages, victim, gender, and race, as well as details about what happened. So you might be thinking, wait a minute, we're creating a bill nationally that requires local law enforcement agencies to turn in data about police-involved shootings. It's 2014. Are you telling me right now that we don't have legislation on the books that requires local law enforcement to turn data over to the FBI? Well, that's exactly what we're telling you. And I'll tell you what, I talked to Dale, as I said, yesterday for about 3 hours, and he elucidated to quite a few statistics that were exceptionally startling. And I'm not going to share them with you now because I'm going to give Dale the opportunity to. But if you think about this for just a second, I'll give you a heads up. Right now, in the States, there are 18,000 independent law enforcement agencies. 18,000. Of that 18,000, what percent do you think turns in reports to the FBI every year regarding fatalities either at the hands of police officers or fatalities in the community? Just ponder that question for about the next 20 minutes, because I'll pose it to Dale. What percentage of that 18,000 independent police departments actually turns in data to the federal government and the FBI? You're going to be astounded. But anyway, looks like we're going to force local law enforcement to actually do what, in our opinion, they should have been doing this whole time. So that bill moving through Congress and is heading towards Barack Obama's desk right now. So that's good. Here's a neck of the woods kind of story for you kids over in Iowa, talking about the city of Casey, Iowa. Iowa's chief fire investigator, this is a great story, suspects that a blaze that destroyed the city hall there in Casey back in August was probably caused by arson, but the damage was so extensive that they may never be able to find out what happened. So the combination city hall and community center burned down early on the morning of August 20th, which coincidentally was the day that the state auditors were scheduled to arrive to look at the city's books, and flames were first spotted in part of the building where the city's offices were located. Investigators, including those from the FBI and the Federal Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, are awaiting the release of the state audit, which is likely now months away, and the records burning in the city's offices there are probably going to make the audit a little more difficult. Right now, there have been no arrests. A search warrant was executed shortly after the blaze at the home of the longtime city clerk, Dorothy Dillinger, and she was interviewed by investigators a few days after the fire. She never went back to work after the interview, and she later resigned. She's not been able to be reached by phone, according to the people who wrote this article, but she said that she didn't have anything to do with the blaze. Local officials knew that state auditors were scheduled to arrive that day, and the audit of city finances was being done as the result of a petition signed by more than 160 local residents. Larger communities in Iowa are audited every single year. But Casey, a city of about 425, hadn't been audited in more than 20 years. This is great. It goes on to say that the mayor has described the call for an audit as a fishing expedition. He believes that the timing of the fire purely coincidental. Oh, my goodness. So Iowa, guys, man, having some problems out there. Sorry to hear about that. But probably arson is what they're saying on the day of the audit. Mayor doesn't think so, though. Not a big deal. Not a big deal. Let's move into some economic news before we run out of time here. The Dow is currently up 81 points, sitting at 18,04, so just above 18,000 on the Dow. Let's see here. Gold falling a little bit today, but not too much. We are at 1178, so we're still below that 1180 mark. And silver right now actually on the rise a little bit. $15.82 big pennies will buy you an ounce of silver, and oil staying relatively flat right now at 56.25 cents for a barrel of oil. Let's move on here. There's been the first arrest of a trader involved with the foreign exchange market. This is the very first one that there has been. This is a former trader at the Royal Bank of Scotland, has become the first UK banker to be arrested on suspicion of rigging the $3.5 trillion a day foreign exchange market. City of London Police and the Serious Fraud Office, I like the name of that office, Serious Fraud. And we're not just the fraud office, we're the Serious Fraud Office. They arrested an unnamed man at an address in Essex on Friday morning, and the SFO refused to give any more details, confirming only that an individual had been arrested in connection with one of its investigations. But sources confirmed that the investigated individual did work at RBS and was involved in the trading of foreign current rates. So first of the arrests that has gone down, obviously this includes the six big banks in the UK that were fined a total of $2.6 billion by UK and US regulators last month for their part in the racket, which is about the best description that you can call it. But right now, they're saying that this is probably the first of hopefully dozens of arrests, as many traders are right now facing possible jail time for the scandal, widely believed to be even bigger than the LIBOR interest rate rigging scandal. So one arrest down, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of bankers still needing to go into jail, as far as I'm concerned. Let's move on here. Central banks are secretly controlling all futures prices, according to Chris Powell. Chris Powell is the secretary and treasurer of the Gold Antitrust Action Committee, and he recently uncovered bombshell evidence which shows intense central bank interventions at the CME Group, which handles the $1 quadrillion worth of businesses annually. A quadrillion, of course, is $1,000 trillion. The greatest document that's come out recently has been the filings by the CME Group, which operates the major futures exchange in the U.S. They filed a letter with the U.S. Commodity Futures Trading Commission showing that the central banks are receiving special volume discounts for trading futures on all the major future exchanges, not just financial future contracts, but metal futures contracts and even agricultural future contracts. So the CME Group's most recent 10K filing with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission listed its customers. Included in that list are governments and central banks. This is really a fairly sensational development because nobody can trade against central banks. They create money. If central banks are secretly trading in the futures markets, then there are no markets. That means the banks are controlling all the future prices in the United States. Oh my gosh, where are we going and why are we in this handbasket? I wonder. Okay, China pledging now, offer some assistance to Russia as Russia is still recovering from the shock of its ruble's crash last Tuesday. It lost more than 20% of its value against the dollar and the euro. It did bounce back a little bit, but it's still down to about half of its value. And the Chinese foreign minister has pledged to support Russia as it faces this economic downturn due to sanctions and a drop in oil prices. So they're obviously offering to boost trade in the yuan, making that the solution. So are we going to see more collusion between Russia and China? Of course we are. Of course we are. There has been a lot of speculation this last month about Russia potentially selling off a bunch of its gold reserves. Well, that's not true. That has turned out to be very, very untrue. Apparently on Friday, news outlets reported that Russia had added to its gold reserves for the eighth straight month, adding another 600,000 ounces of gold to its reserves. And on Friday, Bloomberg reported that of December 1st, Russia's stockpile of gold rose to 38.1 million ounces of gold, up from 37.6 just last month. So obviously laying those rumors of Russia selling its gold to rest. And again, does it have an effect on the price of gold here in the States? Doesn't seem to. You know, gold still seeming to be going down. Weird deal. And then there's some more gold coming, news coming out of the Ukraine right now, as it is being reported that cunning fraudsters have conned the UK Central Bank branch in Odessa into buying $300,000 worth of gold, which turned out to be lead painted with gold paint. This is a criminal case has now been opened, and they are carrying out an investigation to identify those involved with the crime. This is, of course, according to a an Odessa police force captain there. But the preliminary investigation suggests that a gang had somehow had someone working for them inside the bank that forged the necessary paperwork to allow the sale of fake gold bullion. It's also been discovered that the bank staff were not regularly checked when entering or exiting the premises. Now, since this discovery, the National Bank no longer buys precious metal over the counter as it cannot be sure of its authenticity. Remember that story from Germany last week, holding, closing down physical gold desks because they're not able to verify authenticity or verify ownership. So now we're seeing that same situation unfolding in Ukraine. And this is obviously, of course, after they have confirmed the theft of several kilograms of gold already happening in the Odessa region. And that incident occurred as a cashier apparently robbed the bank of some gold and then fled to Crimea. And so, you know, more gold robbing. I mean, we're just robbing Ukraine blind at this point. We just got to feel so sorry for these people. It's just unbelievable. And then Belarus having some problems also. Their ruble The Belarusian ruble is tied to the Russian ruble, but the Belarusian ruble is not being supported like the Russian ruble is. So Belarusian people are dealing with a lot of financial issues. Also, same kind of situation going on that we saw in Russia, as the Belarusian people going out to buy as much as they can get their hands on as their economy starts to collapse. There's a great article about that. Again, if you go to redpillreports.com, you can follow along with all of these articles. There's a lot more going on in the world than I can ever seem to get to. Let's move into some tech stuff right now. There is a report coming from NextGov, which is suggesting that there's no way possible that any of our government institutions could bounce back from an attack similar to what just happened at Sony. So stick that in your pipe and smoke it, because what they're saying now is that a file-wiping attack such as what happened at Sony Pictures would bring major federal departments to their knees, because most of them do not have data loss contingency plans, according to the latest figures on compliance with the government's cybersecurity laws. Further, unplugging the systems to contain the damage, which is what Sony did, would impair an agency's ability to carry out its constitutional mandates, some former federal cyber leaders are saying now. And of course, while it's debatable that whether or not North Korea somehow, you know, had something to do with this hacktivist attack, seizing the opportunity to ransack an environment like Sony's is obviously something that these people are capable of. So now, you know, what is the response going to be from the federal government? Obviously, they're going to. We talked about the task force for leaks. That's probably going to have quite a bit to do with the cybersecurity upgrades that we'll see. You know, they can't let a good crisis go to waste, so that's important. And since we're talking about cyber attacks right now, are you right now sitting at home? Are you ready for a cyber attack? Now, we could talk about Ebola. It could be the thing that risks it all. We could talk about, you know, the sun flare or whatever taking down the grid. But cyber attacks got to be way at the top of the list now for things you need to be prepared for. So let's just go over a couple few things that you personally can do to be prepared for this stuff. There's some financial concerns. You should be financially prepared. Use cash instead of credit or debit cards. It sounds inconvenient or almost ancient and antiquated, but cash is still king. Your personal information is not going to be breached, and your purchases are not going to be tracked. So obviously not a bad idea. Use an RFID blocker if you can. That's obviously, we're talking about protecting yourself from individual cyber attack where you're at the store and someone can scan your card through your pocket. Use an RFID blocker. You might as well. Use a credit card online instead of a debit card. Credit cards offer more protection than debit cards. Have a cash emergency fund in a safe place. Keep it in your safe at home. Have a backup way to pay bills, things like that. In your office, have a plan. Figure out how to get out of your building if the lights go out. You ever been stuck in an elevator when the lights go out? I have. Not something I want to go through again, ladies and gentlemen. So have a backup plan. Plan the emergency, alternate routes. Figure out a backup way to get home in the event of an emergency. Don't just consider your normal route the route. You know, plan two or three extra routes in case things happen. Back up your projects on a regular basis. If you're a computer guy like I am, you got to have lots of stuff going on, so make sure it's all backed up. Have an emergency office kit. Have water, food, first aid, cash, comfortable shoes. That's important. And a few items like that that you can start with, and then follow your IT's, your office's IT protocols regarding online security and confidentiality, so you yourself don't become the reason inadvertently that you know, the data was breached at your facility there. Anyway, a couple other great tips on this article. Again, if you go to redpillreports.com, you'll be able to find it. I want to jump over into some health news right now, because the flu outbreak apparently is blossoming across the country right now. Wonder why that could be. Health experts are saying part of the problem is that this year's vaccine doesn't provide protection for H3N3, which is obviously the strain of influenza that's making its way across the country. And this year's vaccine does help protect against H1N1 and one or two other strains of influenza B. But earlier this month, the CDC issued a health advisory stating that only 48% of the flu virus samples taken last month were closely related to this year's impending virus that's going around. However, the wonderful people at the CDC and other health experts, I'm using air quotes, still recommend that people go for the vaccine at a minimum. The vaccine may prevent a more serious case of the flu. Okay, I'm going to talk about my friend Jennifer, who is one of these people that gets her kids vaccinated all the time, and it drives me absolutely crazy. Last weekend, had to go get the flu shot, didn't you, Jen? Just had to go get it. I talked to you. I said, don't do it. You're not going to want to do this. What did she have this weekend? 102 fever, strep throat, couldn't leave bed for 4 days, had to go to the hospital for IVs because she was going to die, ladies and gentlemen. And where did that come from? I wonder. Could it have to anything to do with the multitude of viruses that they put inside a vaccine, supposedly to bolster your immune response, which obviously is not reality? Please, for the love of God, don't go get a flu shot, ladies and gentlemen. Do not do it. It's ridiculous. It's not going to help you, okay? Don't put that junk in your kids. Oh, my gosh. My gosh. Okay, here's an interesting story about ADHD medication. Now, there's a report coming out saying that despite the main selling point of pharmaceutical companies having used ADHD, obviously the main selling point is to improve school performance among children and teenagers, but a new study published at the Journal of Health and Economics suggests the opposite is actually true. ADHD medicine strongly correlated with a decrease in school performance. The study was based out of Quebec, Canada, where there's an unusually high percentage of school-aged children being prescribed with ADHD medication. And it is said that 44% of Canada's ADHD prescriptions are written in Quebec, even though that region only consists of 20% of the country's population. Wow. I'll tell you what, you may not know this, but I have a school administrator in my family who is a principal. And I asked him, I said, do your schools get more federal funding when you have, quote unquote, problem kids? Of course they do. It pays them money to have kids on medication in schools. It is a racket. There is no reason to put your kid on ADHD medication. Ritalin is one of the worst drugs that you could ever put a kid on. I mean, you're talking about snuffing out childhood. That's what you're trying to snuff out. Boys are supposed to be rambunctious. That's what boys are about. And if you take that and say, well, this is a problem, or we got to, you know, corral this rambunctiousness, or we won't be able to propagandize these kids in these institutional, you know, I'm using the term school here pretty lightly, we won't be able to propagandize to them and turn them into effective, unintelligent workers unless they're 12 being rambunctious. Again, any of these stupid mental disorders that they want to put in that psychology book, show me one test. Show me the one test that correlates an MRI that says, yes, this kid's MRI clearly shows he has a mental disorder. It can't be done because it's a scam. Anyway, lots more news. Couldn't get to all of it. Sorry about that. But stay right here. Commander Dale Brown.
At Truth Frequency Radio, we bring you the very best personalities in the independent media without the corporate influence and with limited commercial interruption. Over the past year, Truth Frequency Radio has become one of the fastest growing media outlets in the world, and we owe it all to you. That's why with every donation of $30 or more, we'll send you your very own Survive Drive as a way of saying thanks for your continued support. The Survive Drive is jam-packed with nearly 600 ebooks to help you survive everything from everyday life to major disasters. Donate today and we'll continue to wage war against the powers that shouldn't be. Again, thanks for your support and for making Truth Frequency Radio your choice for news without the hate, hype, and fear.
Judith Baker was once a promising science student who dreamed of finding a cure for cancer. This exposé is an account of how she strayed from a path of mainstream scholarship to a life of espionage in New Orleans with Lee Harvey Oswald. In her narrative, she offers extensive documentation on how she came to be a cancer expert and what led to her involvement in the development of a biological weapon that Oswald was to smuggle into Cuba to eliminate Fidel Castro. Details on what she knew of Kennedy's impending assassination and her belief that Oswald was a deep cover intelligence agent who was framed for an assassination he was actually trying to prevent are also revealed. Me and Lee by Judith Baker. Special JFK 50th Anniversary Signed Limited Edition. $30 including shipping. Limited number of these available. Order your copy today at federaljack.com/store.
Sure, I'm glad I tried that new Iodine Now microplant powder formulation.
You liked it, huh? I told you it would change your life.
Yeah. I feel fantastic, and I have so much more energy.
Hi, I have your Iodine Now delivery.
Oh, yes, my second order arrived. Thank you so much.
Hey, buddy, why don't you ask this lady out for a date?
Good idea. Now that I'm taking Iodine Now, I have the energy to enjoy my life again.
It looks like you're getting back your old charm, buddy.
I'd love to go out to dinner with you. And can I try some of the Iodine Now?
Of course you can. You just delivered me a 1-year supply.
Your future looks really great.
I finally agree with you.
Iodine Now, part of the MicroPlant Powder family. MicroPlant Powder is available in 15 different formulations. Call 888-910-4367 or visit the website to find the one that's right for you. And listen to our new audio descriptions for every product only at MintUSA.org.
This is Truth Frequency Radio.
No hate, no hype, no fear. Real people, real radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys for sticking with us through that 3-minute break. We are moving into the second hour of the broadcast today. This is, of course, your daily dose of deprogramming. And what we have been talking about ad nauseum for as long as I can remember, really, is this issue of police brutality and that division between civilians and police officers and that agenda that seems to be kind of driving that wedge deeper and deeper and deeper when really, fundamentally, what we need to do is try and bridge that gap and try and bring both of the affected parties together. So I have been absolutely just clamoring to get an opportunity to speak with Commander Dale Brown, and it is my absolute pleasure, ladies and gentlemen, to introduce all of you to him today. For those of you who don't know Commander Dale Brown, we'll give you a little bit of background here. Back in 1995 on the east side of Detroit, Commander Brown officially formed the Vipers group. Now, Vipers is the Violence Intervention Protective Emergency Response System, which sounds like a mouthful, but essentially it was a bodyguard tactical training program that emphasized the importance of, and here are the key words for today, ladies and gentlemen, emphasized the importance of mission-motivated, altruistic community service. I tell you, Mr. Brown, when I hear those words, I get chills. So this organization became known for helping the community by stopping home invasions and murders that had been a problem for many, many years prior. This resulted in a good quality of life for the residents there who lived inside of the community, and the byproduct of which meant that the building owners went back into the black for the first time in 20 years, and the police department received accolades for 90% reduction in violent crime and 9/11 calls. Fast forward to 2006, Dale Brown opened the Threat Management Center located in Detroit and began offering classes to the public as well as law enforcement officers for free. The same year, the Detroit Threat Management Center began its maritime nautical rescue assisting private boat owners in distress on the waterways bordering the U.S. and Canada. I have to tell you, I really want to nominate Commander Dale Brown for President of the Universe. That's essentially what I took away from our 3-hour conversation yesterday, is that I can hear you laughing in the background, Commander Brown, but the issue is that your stance and your organization is so grounded in what I would only consider to be common sense that it's actually kind of astounding these days to be presented with somebody who is really fundamentally integrity based and you know, somebody who believes in the process of ongoing improvement. I mean, I can't say enough good things about you and your organization. So before we get into your organization, obviously the Detroit Threat Management Center is something we're going to talk a lot about today. Commander Brown, would you do us a favor and just give us a little bit more insight into your background and how it was that you became the most amazing person that I've met on planet Earth so far?
Thank you.
Yeah.
You know, I originally, when I first started this, I've been studying martial arts my whole life since I was a kid. My mother, who was in the military, used to take us to the gun range as small children while she was in college. I remember attending college classes when I was in elementary school with her. And my father's a school teacher. I grew up in Ann Arbor, a college town, and I remember that, you know, although I didn't see any violence, I never knew anyone got killed or, you know, no gangs. The only gangs where I lived were the hockey team, soccer team, you know, some type of academic teams from universities. There's no gangs. And so, you know, I never knew anything about people getting murdered or anything like that. And so I was in the military. I was an airborne paratrooper. I was a private investigator when I got out of the military. So when I came to Detroit in 1993, I started teaching self-defense. I created a system, because I've been studying martial arts, like I said, and firearms my whole life. I heard this horrible story that happened here in Detroit. It was a young lady who was chased off a bridge in front of her child while people cheered. And men had attacked this woman. And I also thought it was amazing. Two men jumped off the bridge to try to save her. They did not successfully do so. But that's what really brought out the need to me to come to Detroit and teach self-defense. Was that there were people that could definitely have a great quality of life and be alive instead of dead if they had proper training. Mm-hmm. And so that was the impetus for me coming to Detroit. I'm not from Detroit. My family is from Detroit. My history, like a lot of African-Americans in this community, my family started the first African-American-owned hospital, a privately-owned hospital in Detroit. Mm-hmm. When my great-grandparents, who were both doctors, left the South in fear of the Klan, who did not like the fact there were two African-American married doctors that were doing very well financially, they received death threats, and the way they answered those death threats was to come to Detroit and thrive. They ran a thriving hospital, which was passed down to my grandfather, who was a doctor, my mother, who was a doctor, joined the military, and my little sister is also a physician. So I come from a family of physicians. No one that is directly community service oriented. So my history is not in anything other than in family history is directly related to collegiate oriented professions that are normally within the box. So my way of thinking, my altruistic attitude is not really shared by my family.
Okay.
So it's a unique situation. And when I came to Detroit and I heard that story of the girl getting chased off, the mother being chased off the bridge, yanked from her car, I thought, my God, if somebody was on that bridge that I could have trained, they could have saved her life. If somebody from my training, that had my training from my school, was on that bridge, they would have stopped a child from seeing their parent chased off a bridge and struck with a tire iron. Mm-hmm. They would have stopped Detroit from having a horrible story, which was featured on CNN all day long for 5 days straight. They interviewed people in Japan talking about this case of this woman chased off a bridge and killed in front of her child. Hmm. And This just made me even more focused on training people here in Detroit. So I started teaching at the YMCA. I started teaching in the parks of Detroit because I didn't have any money. I saw the need in the community I was living in because I was somewhere in the east side of Detroit where I was normally working in the suburbs at night. I didn't realize that it was a terrible place because during daylight, all the really violent people were sleeping and the families were at school and at work. Mm-hmm. So it looked very peaceful to me during the day. And at night I was usually working in security out in the suburbs. And so I didn't know it was a bad thing until I wasn't working in the suburbs and I saw families were under siege, literally under siege. And I thought, well, all we need to do is call the police and we can solve these issues. And I was definitely surprised to find out that that was not going to help.
Right. And so here in the, you know, in America, we obviously have a history of kind of taking things into our own hands when the need presents itself. But, you know, what you did with creating the Threat Management Center was you took a completely different tack than what, you know, most people would consider to be traditional law enforcement. Your whole program seems to be based on altruism, on integrity, on perspective, and on respect, which I'm not sure if any of those words come up in the police training manuals across the nation right now. So talk a little bit about what separates your organization from standard law enforcement. You know, what is it about you guys? What's your track record like? Talk a little bit about your organization, if you would, sir.
Well, the reality is, I personally don't believe in treating people differently than I would want to be treated. Mm-hmm. So in my organization, I made sure that I, taught those virtues. You know, why would you want someone to yell at someone? Why would you want to yell at someone because someone told you that was the way to conduct yourself? Someone told you that that was the way to get humans to conform? Well, I don't believe that. And I was right. The reality is yelling and screaming at people, disrespecting them, creates not just psychologically a negative interaction, which leads to violence that was avoidable. By you disrespecting people, what you're doing is you are inherently disconnecting yourself from humanity. And every time you yell and scream at someone, every time you disrespect someone, you are causing yourself internal pain as you are causing others pain. And this disassociative behavior will destroy you, your family, and your community if you continue to condone that kind of behavior. Mm-hmm. So in my organization, I learned that basically all the things that we think of as normal are basically wrong. And the reason why they're wrong is they're all violations of psychological principles. So I say that to say that in law enforcement, often you'll hear people say, well, you got to maintain control of the scene. So that means to them, you got to yell at people. And if they don't do what you say, you got to get them to capitulate immediately.
Right.
The truth is, by you taking the time to do that, you're not able to read body language. You're not able to understand people. You believe inherently that you're more important than them. Mm-hmm. And you can never do that, whether you own a restaurant, whether you run a church, or whether you are a municipal employee. You can never believe that you are more important than the people that you serve. And in the case of a person who's a warrior, the person who is involved in conflict or warfare, this person has to concern himself first and foremost, not with themselves or their feelings or their needs, but with that of their enemy. So it's even counterproductive for war for someone to think, I have to get home to my family at night. I have to, it's my way or the highway. You know, my safety comes first. My safety is paramount. These are things that are taught to police officers, and this is what inherently destroys their ability to function to a high degree of success. Mm-hmm. So it's a philosophy that destroys their thought process. And in our case, I got rid of all those things and trained people differently. I've had law enforcement officers, probably over 100 on my staff in 20 years. Mm-hmm. I learned a lot about them by having them on my staff, by seeing them in conflict, by seeing them in situations where there was high stress, there were weapons involved, there were gangs involved. I got to see real police officers under real life stress and duress conditions, mm-hmm, consistently over many years in many jurisdictions, which gave me a unique perspective and understanding. Since I have nothing to gain by their failure or success, I'm able to look at it from an objective standpoint and then make sure my staff does not do what they do,
right?
That's negative. And let me say this: there were a few good things I learned from police officers that we do incorporate. And unfortunately, the vast majority of things were not appropriate. Mm-hmm. And there are good police officers out there that were very helpful to this organization. When I first started, it was just me, a dog, and a rifle. And there were a couple police officers that actually bonded with me and my organization because they knew that I was here for the families. They knew that I didn't have to be here. I chose to be here.
Right.
and they respected my mission and they supported it. Those good police officers were responsible for stopping the majority of police officers from interfering in our community service efforts. Mm-hmm. And you would think that you know, police would not interfere with community service efforts, but the truth was most of them were obstructionists. They just really wanted to stop anything that helped the families. The commanders were not like that, and the community oriented police officers were not like that. They were very positive.
Right.
However, the majority of police officers are not commanders, nor are they community service oriented.
Right.
They have various things that they're into. You know, some were into the ego of the job, some were into the power of the job, some were into how the ego and the power of the job got them more women attention from women. Mm-hmm. And then others were, of course, into actual overt nefarious behavior.
Right.
And so, you know, I say all that to say that this is a real life organization that was organic. I had no funding. People thought, and it's very disrespectful, but people thought that the only way I'd be able to start an organization and for it to be sophisticated and professional is if it was government affiliated. And people often thought my organization was government affiliated, which I find very disrespectful since they tried to stop me so often,
right?
You know, from helping people, and I had to sacrifice everything. And that's one of the things that people don't understand is that the only way I was able to make this truly happen was I had to give up ever having a future. Mm-hmm. When I saw police officers not just being apathetic and complacent to violence, when I saw them leave situations, not show up at all to horrific violence, I really thought, my God, I'm from a suburban college town. Detroit is very scary. And so how could I make a difference in Detroit? And I said, my God, I'm going to die here. I'm literally going to be killed here. Mm-hmm. There's no way I'm going to be able to deal with these gangs because I watch television and the gangs kill people.
Right.
And now that I see police leaving, not showing up, and I mean, the things I saw police do, I thought, my God, there's no way I'm going to live. Mm-hmm. So I really just, you know, said, you know what? I'm a warrior, trained my whole life. Maybe this was the reason I was put on Earth, was to die for families. So,
well, then how did you structure the training of your officers to eliminate, you know, all of those concerns and things that you were seeing the other, you know, the state and the city police officers doing? What's different about your training than their training?
Well, first of all, I made sure that they never called themselves officers or security or any of those things that were normal that we don't want them to emulate. Mm-hmm. I call them facilitators. That's the basic term. You're here to facilitate, to help. So if you know your definition is not to be something that's, you know, inherently not what's needed, mm-hmm. then it changes your perspective. So VIPER stands for Violence Intervention Protective Emergency Response System. It's a training system. it's not. So you cannot form a group attachment to it. You have to form an attachment to its purpose. Okay. Then I created an entire belief system that supports altruism and integrity, and then I supported it. And then I created electronic countermeasures and physical countermeasures so that people cannot deviate. And and so, you know, by having a system that's based on accountability and responsibility and the inability to explain inappropriate outcomes, what happens is you create an environment that is not conducive for inappropriate behavior of team members. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, one of the things I'm very clear about with my staff is that the enemy on our staff, for example, is anyone, as a person who's not on our staff, is anyone who breaks our core values, which would not allow you to put anyone's life at risk, to harm people, to do things that are inappropriate, because that means automatically you're not one of us.
Right.
So then therefore you are not protected. We do not protect you the way we do citizens because you did something against your team members or against citizens. If you did something that was immoral or illegal or disrespectful, you are no longer one of us. Mm-hmm. And so once you create an identity that's based on what you produce rather than what you say you are, you can stop that that separation from humanity, right, of your group. My group, I got them to psychologically believe their purpose is to help people the same way they would their family, mm-hmm, to view people, all people, as though they are an extension of your family. And so imagine if you're not supposed to, just because someone comes and threatens to kill you or calls you a racial name or whatever they're doing, what would you do if that was your family member that did the exact same thing? If that was your cousin, would you kill them? Would you stab them? Would you beat them?
No, you'd you'd take them aside and you'd say that expressing yourself like that at family functions is not permissible.
Yeah.
To have an adult conversation.
Yeah, or if your family was really out of control drinking or had a psychological episode, you know, you might take your cousin down to the ground and take the gun from him, but you're not going to, or knife from him, but you're not going to kill them and stomp them and shoot your neighbor's kid because he had a toy gun. Or, you know, what if they were drunk and started shooting the gun off? You're going to go kill your family member, really? Or are you going to sit there and talk to them? You're going to say, hey, man, put the gun down. Stop it. You get out of control. Put the gun down. You're going to do that. And I promise you 99% of the time, with the exception of ultra-violent occasions, you can solve issues, even ones involving weapons, which we have done. So we're not talking about theory. Mm-hmm. We're talking about what we actually do. This is not speculation. So we get a lot of haters that say, you know, not now. We get a lot of people. Most people are really positive towards the organization.
Right.
We still have a few little trolls and haters that are ultra. Well, they're in fear, and they've been exposed to a fear philosophy. The philosophy of fear, and that's what law enforcement officers are trained in. And they use this philosophy to justify all types of inhumane behaviors. But the reality is you don't have to be violent. You don't have to think violently. That was a fantasy from television played out in real life, and I approved it. You can solve issues, even violent issues, by thinking positively and finding a nonviolent solution. It can be done. It's just a belief system. That's all you have to do is adopt a belief system of, I want to not kill humans. I want to treat them like family. And I promise you, you're going to have a positive outcome.
Can we talk for a second about your criteria for selecting an officer? How do you qualify someone to bring them into your organization?
Let's call them students first.
Students, okay. Sorry. Got to use that officer word. I apologize.
Yeah, yes, that officer word.
I'll get it right by the end of the interview, I swear.
No problem. we hear it all the time. I'm dealing with that on the internet now. People are calling us private police and private security, and we really need to separate that.
Well, what's the title that you would rather us call you? Agents of Change as an organization?
First of all, we're a school. So okay. Number one, it's educationally. Without the school, my results will be worse than the police.
Okay.
Without my school, I promise you, my organization, like in many other organizations, would be worse than the police without an educational foundation. The first thing we are is a school. The next thing we are is performance driven. So what that means is if you can't perform, you can't do it.
Right.
Well, we're the only performance driven organization on earth that deals with protective service or public safety.
Hmm.
The only one. Think about that for a second. The only one, private or government, that says you cannot perform, therefore you cannot be.
Yeah, it's too much like right. I mean, it's too much like right, really.
If you can't think well, if you can't, they have right now in law enforcement, they have these, if you think about it, they're shooting targets and they're scoring them shooting on a piece of paper. Mm-hmm. Yet, no piece of paper ever attacks a police officer.
None that I've heard of, right.
No. And so if you wanted to test, like a football player, you don't have them do inanimate things. You have them do animated things. They test them based on a set of drill standards. They don't have that for law enforcement. They don't say, okay, here's what we're going to do, which determines whether you can be a police officer or not. Let's see you make good decisions when you walk in this room. Let's see if you make right decisions. And then they grade you. That's not true. They don't do that.
Hmm.
They say, oh, look, you hit your piece of paper. There's a 300. You're an officer.
Right.
Really? Did that work?
Mm-hmm.
In L.A., they were looking for a officer who decided to tell the truth of the situation, resulting in his termination. And since he was incapable of accepting a system that was inherently inappropriate to him and racist, he simply snapped out. And while the other officers were looking to protect other officers in L.A., they decided they would shoot a truck that was a different color.
Yes.
Looking for a black man, they shot two Asian women.
Yeah.
A big black man. They confused two Asian women with a big black man.
And they didn't just shoot the truck. I mean, let's tell the whole story. They shot the heck out of that truck.
They shot 91 rounds on full automatic. That's three magazine changes in an assault rifle. Mm-hmm. And then they only shot the Asian women five times. Thank God. And as a result, the women are now millionaires, multimillionaires, and alive.
Yeah, but who paid for that? Taxpayers. That's the bad part about that.
Ugh. It is, absolutely. We're now funding.
Yes.
Like it's almost like a like a some type of warped lottery. You know,
it totally is.
It's a warped lottery. There's a whole bunch of guys here in Detroit that are experiencing this warped lottery.
I call it a police initiated retirement fund. That's what I call it.
Yeah, only thing is what it's doing is actually, because a lot of people that are shooting wrongfully are suing and becoming rich. And I have to say, I wonder if sometimes they're not working together. Like they went to high school together and they're like, I'll shoot you. Then you can sue us and give me half the money.
Wow, that's a great idea. I hadn't even thought of that. That's a great idea.
I need to investigate that, really.
Right?
Some of these shootings are so dumb that, like, one was one here in Detroit was an officer hit a person. The guy got out to fight the officer. The officer shot him. Okay, you hit them with your car.
Right.
Then they got out and got mad to beat you up. You decide to shoot them.
Right.
Whatever happened to man up? Whatever happened to take an ass whooping like a man? Whatever happened to you know, I remember back in the 80s, they used to say that, like, about kids in the 90s, they would say, stop being a punk and pull out a gun. Fight like a man. If you take your lumps, take your lumps. Well, how come police officers don't have to man up?
I know. I
don't understand. What's wrong with getting your ass beat?
Well, especially if you're going to be in an ego-driven job like that. You know, it's like...
You can't fight. You can't fight.
It's like Doug Stanhope. Doug Stanhope said it best. He said, a lot of dudes will go out there and wrestle alligators, but nobody has ever done it without an audience. And that's what I think of most law enforcement in terms of why they get involved. Anyway, we are speaking right now with Commander Dale Brown. We've got a 3-minute break. We're going to come back and we're going to delve more into this police brutality issue and some of the possible solutions. Keep it right there.
So, you want the news and information without the hate, the hype, the fear? Well, you've come to the right place. You can support Truth Frequency Radio by spreading the word on social networking sites like Facebook, Twitter, or your favorite forums. Want to take Truth Frequency Radio on the road? Listen on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or other mobile devices. Want more than just the free stuff? Sign up for a VIP membership for as little as $4 a month and get super high-quality downloads, member-only content, and instant access to your favorite shows without the wait. It's only through your loving support that we're able to cover the cost and continue broadcasting. So now, stay tuned for more Free Speech Radio right here on the Truth Frequency Radio Network. KTFRN. Worldwide.
We all know the importance of having storable foods, but what about when the food runs out? What then? For real food independence, you need a supply of non-hybrid seeds. Introducing the Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com. The Survival Seed Vault is sealed for freshness and includes 20 varieties of easy-to-grow non-hybrid seeds for only $37.95. For less than $40, you've got real food independence. And the Survival Seed Vault includes detailed planting and seed-saving instructions. Imagine the barter power you'll have when the food supply does collapse. Right now, save $9 instantly when you buy three or more Survival Seed Vaults from MyPatriotSupply.com. Same-day shipping on all orders, plus free shipping on orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. Or discover more emergency preparedness products at MyPatriotSupply.com. That's MyPatriotSupply.com.
You make a great team. It's been that way since the day you met. But your erectile dysfunction? It could be a question of blood flow. Sometimes when a politician has been in D.C. too long, it goes to his head and he just can't seem to get the job done. Used on a daily basis, WinnerEgg in Congress will help you every time the moment is right to have your voice heard at the federal level. When using WinnerEgg, it's important to note that the borders will be secured, Second Amendment rights protected, Obamacare and Planned Parenthood will be defunded, and common sense will be used in solving the nation's problems. Other signs of erectile dysfunction may include extreme skin discoloration,
the inability to punch oneself out of a wet paper bag,
or maintain a spine in the face of liberal opposition,
amore de gramine verde, smoking,
and golf. If you have a boner lasting longer than 23 years, seek immediate medical attention. WinnerEgg. Because Boehner shouldn't count his chickens before they hatch.
It's Boehner.
I'm J.D. WinnerEgg, and I approve this message.
Like a cancer that's silently spreading.
Agent for Truth with Joe Bannister.
Sundays on Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys for sticking with us through that 3-minute break. I have to admit that Boehner commercial just makes me giggle every time I hear it. I want to highly recommend, and I mean highly, highly recommend, ladies and gentlemen, that everybody go check out threatmanagementcenter.com. If you are a law enforcement officer in Detroit, you need to know Commander Dale Brown. You need to get involved. They offer free training for law enforcement officers out there. And I'll tell you, one of the things that strikes me about your organization is not just this intent on altruism, which is absolutely the most refreshing thing that I've come across in terms of law enforcement in a long time, but it's this idea that your goal with your students, is the offering to fill their toolboxes effectively with things that will give them options for, you know, removing themselves from violent situations or to properly deal with situations that could, you know, result in violence. So it's about a psychological change, and it's about intellectually preparing these people to go into a situation that potentially could be violent. And so to me, you know, one of the things I'd like to talk about a little bit, Dale, is what is the result of all of this training been for your organization and for the surrounding communities? Talk a little bit about the track record of your involvement with the community and what you guys have been able to actually accomplish there in Detroit, if you would, sir.
Well, on multiple levels, we've been able to, and in multiple countless situations, we've been able to stop violence from taking place. We've been able to go into people's lives, erase rape, robbery, and killing before it happens. And that's what we take pride in, is in a preventive model. Mm-hmm. It was found, there was a study done on preventive policing by police officers, and it was done back in, I think it was the 20s. And they've decided, as a government agency, that preventive policing was not in the best interest of society. So that's why we don't do it, because they believed it was not quantifiable. I believe that is false. I believe it is quantifiable. Mm-hmm. And what quantifies it is your quality of life. The fact that you feel a sense of security and safety, the fact that you feel positive about where you live because you believe you're not going to be raped, robbed, and killed, means that your community, your city can thrive. So what I did was I always focused on the one thing, which was community quality of life, not on crime. Crime is ubiquitous. It's a term for that deals with all types of things. If you don't focus, you're going to be unsuccessful. So what I focused on was quality of life. I don't know if people are drug dealers, but I know if they have traffic, the kids can't sleep at night, so you can't have traffic in the apartment buildings. Mm-hmm. So I found legal ways to enforce the law on private property so the drug dealers could not have traffic. I don't know if they were dealing drugs because that's not my business.
Right.
And I explained that to them. I'm here to stop the things that stop the kids in the building from being able to sleep at night and their parents from going to work tomorrow because they are so tired from all the things that were happening in the hallways of the buildings – So that must stop. And I'm willing to die and do whatever it takes to stop you. And once the violent criminals and gangs knew that I was serious, it didn't really matter that I was one person with one rifle and one dog. What it meant to them was when they saw that I was consistent, my belief system, my level of commitment exceeded theirs as violent individuals.
Yes.
They did not want to see how many of them I was willing to, if needed, harm in exchange for saving the families there. Once they knew my commitment was absolute, they were open to my message. And then I found all these different ways of nonviolently changing community behaviors in a very, very bad area, which people called Crack Alley. So it was a at-risk community. I lived in a very tall building on East Jefferson.
Okay.
And this is when I first started the organization, and the families were suffering all the way around the community. And I called the police, and this is what people need to understand. I believed that the police were the answer.
Right.
So I called the police relentlessly. And I so much so that the 911 operators knew my name, so did the police officers. And what I found was that they just were not interested in what I was interested in. I did not want to be Crack Alley. The police officers didn't just accept it. They perpetuated that it stayed Crack Alley.
Right, right.
And what I mean by perpetuated was they didn't do anything to change it. They knew what they could do to change it. They didn't make those changes. Mm-hmm. That was always an option. And the thing that changed me, that made me more proactive, was an incident where I was threatened by a police sergeant here in Detroit with arrest if I interfered in any more illegal activities. And I said, well, sir, you know, I need to help the families. And I actually work in their buildings for their building owners now. And so I legally am obligated.
Right.
And I did that on purpose so that I could not be stopped. I got legally hired by the owners of buildings as their representative of security. I was on a security guard company. Mm-hmm. But my school was around the corner on a major street, and I couldn't function my school because of the gunshots and the screaming and the people suffering around the area. I could not help them. I could not get kids to come to class. I couldn't train their parents. And I even had police officers that were in training. And when the gunshots would go off, we would have to stop the school, turn off the lights. And, you know, with police officers in my classes, they would have to start, you know, they'd pull out their weapons. We had to go outside and try to figure out who's shooting.
Right.
And it just was impossible to run the American dream, which is to do something that makes society better. Mm-hmm. With people dying and being injured. And there was a death every month within this one square block. Let me be clear about that. But what incident changed me from a liaison between citizens and law enforcement and being a proactive agent of change was one incident in particular. A little girl was attacked for 45 minutes, and I watched her get attacked on the city street here called East Jefferson. It was a very large street, and I just called the police over and over again, just like this sergeant told me to. Do not get involved. Just call the police. And legally, I don't really have any rights, special rights at all of any type.
Right.
And so, you know, and out there on the city streets, I'm just Joe Blow citizen. I don't even have a legal right to enforce any rules, structured rules. Now, of course, everyone has the right and ability to defend the lives of others. And I wasn't willing to anger the police at that time. And I was willing to let this little girl be attacked so that I would not get in trouble with police. I did so. And it turns out a lot of other people did the same thing. She was attacked by approximately 15 adults. She's 14. And they sprayed Roach Raid inside of her eyes, mouth, nose. She was flailing broad daylight for 45 minutes. They were beating her and spraying her and giving her chemical burns. And, again, the only reason I didn't interfere was because this police sergeant said he was going to come to my house and take my guns and take me to jail. Mm-hmm. And I did not want to have problems with police. I wanted to help families, train citizens and police, and have a thriving school. And that's all I wanted. Because that's what I thought, you know, my calling was only. And in my, you know, we could get some martial art. You could say it's really a survival system. I teach law and tactics in one place. That was the idea of my school, to learn the law as you learn what to do to defend yourself. And I thought, you know, wouldn't it be great if there was a school that taught both? So I created that school. So in my survival school or martial arts school, we don't have swords. We have pistol, shotgun, rifle, knife, baton, ground fighting, stand-up fighting, and you leave your regular clothes on. Mm-hmm. So there's no special, you know, gi that you wear, special karate clothing or uniform that you wear.
And we should point out here, you're not necessarily anti-firearm either.
No, I'm a firearms instructor.
Okay. I just want to get that out, that it's not just this whole pattern of nonviolence, that you do recognize the need to have firearms or weapons in certain situations.
Yeah, it's just, honestly, with proper training, you just don't. It's not how guns do not. Guns are a choice, just like violence in general. there are alternatives, and I can speak to those alternatives because I've used them.
Right.
Firearms and violence in general, 9 times out of 10, they are avoidable. There is, it's like a lightning strike. The time where you need a firearm is the same as a lightning strike. An example is, remember every dead police officer had a gun at the time of their death, and most of them chose the point of contact with the violent criminal and still were unable to defend themselves successfully.
Right.
You know, even 4 police officers in Seattle were sitting down on duty, armed. A man came up and shot all 4 police officers to death successfully and left the room. Mm-hmm. So how could you be better? How could I be better than 4 police officers who are armed, guns out in the open, and better than all 4 police officers, you by yourself against a violent criminal? Well, you can say, well, you know, I heard of stories of people successfully killing criminals. And that's true. 9 times out of 10, those criminals are used to using guns for threat.
Right.
Just like police officers. They don't shoot people normally. They just point them at people and get them to capitulate. Mm-hmm. So, yes, you can actually shoot those ones. But the dedicated ones, as you can see from the 2 police officers that were just killed in New York, once the killer has decided he's going to kill you or a police officer, you can't stop them using your gun, which is why Secret Service has never used a gun to solve a problem. Yet the Secret Service has solved problems for our presidents.
Right.
In one case, they blocked a gun from a female who was coming to shoot President Ford. In another case, they took the shooter of President Reagan into custody. Mm-hmm. Of course, after he got through shooting. But they had plenty of guns there. And an example of why you don't actually shoot when you're under threat and duress and, you know, you're around other people, and this is what makes school shooting so ridiculous in terms of using guns to solve it. Not only do you have to, in order for you to engage in a firefight against someone else who's actually a threat, you have to be superhuman. You have to be able to overcome the urge to self-preserve. And that is almost impossible without a great degree of training or being a sociopath or psychologically affected person. Mm-hmm. The first thing you always want to do in a firearms engagement is save yourself.
Right.
And so that would have to be overcome if you were going to actually use your gun just to solve a dedicated shooter situation. In other words, you're like some kind of a superhero, right, that doesn't want to live to see tomorrow. And if you have anything you're trying to live for, that is not going to work, because you're going to want to run, seek cover. And that's why when a criminal came into the police station in Detroit with a 20 gauge shotgun, the police officers, all 8 of them, jumped on the ground. And he wasn't even shooting a high caliber gun. He was shooting bird shot from a 20 gauge. Mm-hmm. That's why none of the police officers were dead. And he couldn't aim good at all. And so thank God he wasn't armed with a better weapon. Otherwise, it would have been dead police officers. Instead of what did happen was a police officer shot him at near point blank range, mm-hmm, with a pistol that shoots at less than 3,000 feet per second, which means that you're creating a short-term wound cavity, which is the other reason why pistols don't solve your issue 9 times out of 10. So he shot the criminal, who's got the shotgun in front of him, 4 times. The criminal, in return, shoots another round, blowing his fingers off and causing him to drop the gun. Mm-hmm. He then continues, this is the criminal, after he's been shot 4 times thoracically with a police plus P round, 40 cal, He then continues to walk around attempting to shoot more police officers, but his shotgun did not work anymore.
Wow.
As he backed away, other police officers from down the hallway that decided to re-enter the building shot this individual from the side, eventually putting him down. Hmm. Now, there's no way a school security guard is going to do better than all these Detroit police officers. It's impossible.
Right.
That's those officers just trying to get home to their family at night. They were taught to self-preserve. They are workers. That's what the Supreme Court said, that they're not required to put themselves at risk. So their training supports that. Get to safety first, call for backup, then engage in a safe way. This will lead us to not having 300 officers killed a year by criminals like used to happen in the 70s and 60s, if you go back and check the records. And it'll lead to less than 100 police officers, or right around 100 police officers getting killed every year by criminal activity. Mm-hmm. The majority of police officers, unfortunately, are killed by suicide. And the second highest killing method of death for police officers is car accidents. Hmm. So we need to give police officers more money. We need to give them way more training and a different type of training, not this current type of training. Give them better body armor, bulletproof vehicles. And we need a lot less officers if you do it that way, because what you're going to get is a more motivated professional response. So you actually don't spend any more money. And then what you see is that when an officer's making, you know, 100,000 plus, he will be a different kind of person. And much happier as well, but we'll just get a much more pleasant type of person, and that's what we need in law enforcement that doesn't have as many problems. We know we're looking at officers, and their quality of life is often stressed, and then they in turn convert that stress onto the public. We need to realize that they need to work a lot less hours, in a given week, exposed to people's problems. Exposure to people's problems, you know, causes stress for humans anyway. So we really got to look at the big picture here when it comes to that. But as an organization, what I did was I took all that into account, and I just created a belief system that I believed in and I believe in, and that is that we have to be selfless if we're going to help people with human threat. Humans are the apex predator on Earth. They are the most dangerous creature in the world, 1,000 times more dangerous than a lion, tiger, or bear. But if I tell people, let's go out and let's go down the hallway here. There's a lion, a tiger, and bear down there. No one wants to go. But when you say there could be criminals down there, there's all kinds of people that think that, you know, I'll just take my pistol and go on down there.
Right.
Really? yeah, that's not smart. You're going to find out the hard way. 6 of my personnel have been shot. 1 female, which was standing next to me at the time of her shooting, and 5 males have been shot over between 1995 and 2000.
Okay.
The reason why the shooting stopped is because I got smarter about multiple things. Every time there was a shooting, I learned from those shootings, and I taught differently. So I changed my training system to adapt to the needs of our missions. And part of the training that had to change was how the people that I selected, how we conducted ourselves, the type of equipment and uniforms that we wore, and how we focused our energy, efforts, and function. Mm-hmm. And so the reality is psychology is the key to everything. When that was what was missing from my program, but I had no understanding of psychology because I hadn't been through anything when I started this 20 years ago.
Right.
Now my system is built on psychology, law, and skill in that order. That is the threat management triad: psychology, law, skill.
Wow, it's just so much like right, Commander Brown. I can't tell you how refreshing it is to like actually speak with somebody who's engaged in altruistic, you know, I don't want to say law enforcement because that's not essentially what you're doing, but you're doing community intervention. And, you know, the whole goal of removing the circumstances from an environment that could lead to violence, I mean, that tack, that whole actionary versus reactionary, I think is the perfect encapsulation of exactly what is wrong with law enforcement these days. And you know, you're talking about training and approaching situations in a correct manner, and I keep coming back to not only the Ferguson situation, but there was another situation that happened in Ferguson only a few days after the Michael Brown shooting, and it was where another young man on the sidewalk with a knife, and there's a guy filming him because this guy is obviously unstable at the time, and a pair of police officers show up in a car, and they pull right up onto the sidewalk, right? They almost hit the guy with the bumper is how close they got, and immediately when I'm watching it, I'm thinking, okay, you know, you've gotten a call from the store, so obviously you know there's some sort of incident going on and potentially could involve a weapon. And so you know that it's going to be your responsibility to de-escalate the situation, because clearly the guy on the street corner shouting, "I'm going to stab the police," he's not really interested in de-escalating the situation. So that onus falls on the police officers. But what do? They show up, they pull up right next to the guy, which obviously to me, I was like, man, if that guy's got a knife, I don't want to pull up within 15 feet of the guy. I want to park 30 feet back, start addressing him on a bullhorn, ask him to put it down, find out what the problem is. None of that happened. These guys just get out of the car. The kid kind of does a semicircle around him and they shoot him, you know?
Right.
And we see that over and over and over with the 12-year-old that was shot with the toy gun. The police officers just pull up very close. So to me...
Yeah.
Go right ahead. Go right ahead.
Let me interject there. Go on YouTube, mm-hmm. and you're going to see a lot of police officers, and this is the problem I have, that don't kill the guy with the knife.
Okay.
Now, if your standardized belief system is we must kill the guy with the knife, then it must be for everyone. But
right.
There's a video online, and it's old. I mean, in other words, police officers who have been police officers, this is not some newfangled idea, did it this way. So it was a white man in Boston swinging knives in two hands at groups of officers going crazy, swinging in circles at police officers.
Right, okay.
They're yelling at him to put it down, yelling, "Hey, put it down." Eventually, they take the car and they pin him to a parking meter.
Okay.
Disarm him, take him into custody. Okay. Well, why does it have to be killing when it's an African-American with the knife?
Right.
And here's and he wasn't actually coming and swinging. At that moment, he did come towards the police officers. I saw that video.
Yeah.
And it's so well performed. I just want to, you know, we just need to go make sure that that's accurate. It looked both staged and accurate. So, I mean, I hope some people in Missouri just checked to see it was real. Cause it was so perfect.
Interesting.
It was absolutely perfect. Like it was like textbook, perfect law enforcement, training for a shooting.
Right.
And if you look at that, you think police officers are going through this all the time. And any police officer being honest with you will tell you they've never been through that. That's very, very rare. Mm-hmm. It's extremely rare that a police officer ever uses their gun in the line of duty. Extremely rare. It's like a lightning strike.
Right.
So, you know, but to look at that kind of stuff, you think, oh, police do this all the time. Well, that's one of the reasons why there's a lack of continuity. They don't get a chance to practice. They're not practicing. All of a sudden, they're supposed to get out of a car and make the right decision when they've never been through this before.
Right.
And so we have to create the conditions in their training. And some departments are trying to, but they're often using police officers. Or like one SWAT team guy told me, he uses his kids at high school to be active shooters.
Okay.
You can't use your kids. You have to use people that think differently than you, your children. You know, they can't be police officers and be the active shooter. And that would help train the police officers differently. And we do train police officers and we do participate in drills for active shooters, with the Detroit Police Department and surrounding communities, through FEMA. We've done so for the past 10 years. We have been active shooter and terrorists. Helping to train police officers for these force-on-force conflicts. And I had the privilege, my wife and I, who run our organization, we had a chance to actually participate as officers with the police officers in nuclear, biological, chemical warfare training for police officers preparing for tactical operations to defend against terrorists that are armed with all different types of incredible weaponry.
And
it was the first time I got a chance to work with police officers dressed the same way they are with the same weapons and go and clear rooms and shoot my staff members who were the op for acting, posing as terrorists. And so I got a chance to see them shoot us. And normally I'm on the other side watching my team members, you know, as police officers into the room, and they come in a stack and clear the room. And what I can tell you is that what FEMA told me, the police instructors, these are SWAT team instructors from across the country that work with FEMA to come into Detroit and train annually, train police officers. I said, well, why don't we realistically have the response to police officers entering the room simulated right here in training? When they come in, the bad guys can just start shooting. Mm-hmm. The main instructor, lead instructor, told me that they call it training to win. They required us to wait 3 seconds before police officers could enter before we could shoot the officers with these airsoft munitions.
Right.
And what that did was, I say it gave them a false sense of security stacking going into, you know, buildings and homes where there could be real gunmen.
Right.
Which we see played out in all these different situations where there is an actual person with a gun in a home. Unfortunately, we often hear about it when the police are unsuccessful at going into a regular person's home and they end up getting shot. and this is a reality of going into a structure with an ensconced person who's defending it.
Right, right.
It takes 9 people to overcome 1. 9 to 1. So you're going to die. 9 people have to die to take over a facility or structure from 1 person if that person's already in position to defend it. Well, that is a counterproductive thought process. We can't afford to lose 9 police officers, take out 1 person that's a bad guy in a house. So what normally the SWAT team does is tell the guy to come out. That's why it normally works. Around the house, don't come out. That's also a nonviolent way to solve issues. You can choose to create a nonviolent outcome or not based on your feelings. And that's what has to change. There should be a condition, a reality that, for example, when the guy with the knife came towards the police officers that pulled up in that example you gave,
yeah,
the officer should have had a fully automatic, non-lethal shotgun that shoots, you know, beanbag rounds powerfully into the pelvis area, not into the face,
right,
of the person, causing them not to be able to walk around and their stomach to hurt.
Yeah.
And then you take them into custody. You can't hold knives if you just knock the knife out of his hand with the non-lethal weapon.
Right.
That even if it goes past the guy and hits other people, they're still going to be fine too. And then they have pepper sprays that are strong. They have all these options.
Yeah, it seems like they're not using the options. And I think that's why I wanted to bring you on today. We are out of time, Commander Brown. Thank you so much for joining us on the Red Pill Reports today.
Thank you, sir.
Well, I'd love to have you back in the future. Ladies and gentlemen, please go check out threatmanagementcenter.com. If you're a law enforcement officer, get in touch with Dale Brown and get involved, because this is the right move. Tomorrow, Dr. Alan Miller will be back on the show. We're out of time, ladies and gentlemen. I will see you again.
You think first of vague words that are synonyms for progress and pair them with footage of a high-speed train. Science is doing lots of stuff that may or may not have anything to do with us. See how this guy in a lab coat holds up a beaker? That means we do research. But we also do business in the USA, or want you to think we do. Check out this wind energy thing in Indiana, and this blue-collar guy with dirt on his face. Lest you think we're a faceless entity, look at all these attractive people. Using a specific ratio of Asian people to black people to women to white men, we want to make sure we represent your needs and interests, or at least a version of your skin color in our ads. Did we put a baby in here? Yep.